Welcome to Decoding the Customer, a podcast about customer experience and how to realize customer-centric change in today's dynamic business world. I'm Julia Allfelt, certified customer experience professional, business advisor, and your host as we explore topics, trends, and best practices that are enabling brands to thrive in the age of the customer. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time listening, welcome. If you're a regular listener, thank you, and it's great to have you back. This is episode 30, the first of 4 weekly episodes during the month of March. This month, I'm going to be taking a deep dive into the world of customer experience metrics and measurement. This critically important and sometimes controversial topic is integral to the success of customer-centric business strategies. As customer experience teams grow and mature, they need to measure progress and demonstrate tangible results in order to remain relevant in the business world. To start things off, I'm sharing an interview with Bill McDonald, the CEO of Arvida Group. Arvida owns and operates a network of retirement communities, also known as retirement villages, across New Zealand. My conversation with Bill is yet another example of how you can find customer experience excellence shining through in industries that might not always be at the forefront of our consumer mindset. In our conversation, Bill and I explore how retirement villages are identifying and evolving with the needs of their customers. We look into their strategy for marketing and customer acquisition, given that their buyer might not necessarily be their customer, and how Arvida has leveraged purpose, vision, and culture to deliver measurable value both to customers and to the business. If you're looking for an inspiring example of how an organization's leader creates the connection between customer experience and value in the context of purpose-driven work, then this episode is for you. For more information about this episode, including a summary of the key points covered in my conversation with Bill and links to learn more about Arvida, be sure to check out my website, julia-allfelt.com or decodingthecustomer.com, where you can check out previous episodes or subscribe to the show. If this episode inspires you to learn more about how organizations can understand customer experience performance, measure results, and deliver customer value, then I'd encourage you to check out CX University. CX University has long been a supporter of the customer experience profession, and I'm proud to have them as sponsors of this episode. CX University offers a fantastic array of online courses, CCXP practice tests, webinars, instructor-led training, e-learning, and custom modules. CX University is a CXPA authorized resource and training provider, meaning that their materials have been reviewed and vetted by the Customer Experience Professionals Association for alignment to the 6 core competencies in the CCXP exam. And CX University also provides the option to earn 6 U.S. college credits through their courses. They have a flexible and affordable monthly subscription model and have offered an exclusive discount to listeners of this show. Listeners of this podcast can use the code PODCAST10 to get 10% off their first month subscription. So thank you to CX University for your support. And with that, let's dive into today's show. When we think about customer experience, it's easy to defer to the most common types of everyday experiences like grocery shopping, banking, travel, etc. But customer experience is critical to any organization with a customer or an end user, which is pretty much any organization that's out there. Industries such as healthcare, education, real estate, and others might not spring to mind when we reflect on our own personal day-to-day experiences, but they do provide a wealth of opportunity for learning and case studies about CX excellence in action. In today's episode, we're going to explore retirement community experience within this context. For those who might be thinking, what does this have to do with customer experience in my industry? I invite you to park that thought for just a minute and quickly reflect with me on the weight, importance, and responsibility of brands that operate in this sector. For many elderly consumers, the transition to a different living situation, whether that's to an independent and active community-based environment, or to a setting with needs-based care, may define the most important aspects of their day-to-day life. What kind of experience would you want for yourself or for your parents? Providing the context for where someone spends the last 5, 10, 15, maybe even 30 years of their life is a purpose-driven mandate if I've ever heard one. And it's one that the team at Arvida takes very seriously. From understanding customer needs to defining a vision for the experience and rallying teams around a common purpose, the team at Arvida has clearly put the customer at the center of what they do. I had a chance to explore this in my recent conversation with Bill McDonald. As mentioned at the start of this episode, Bill is the CEO of the Arvida Group, which owns and operates a network of retirement villages across New Zealand. Bill is focused on building a retirement and aged care business that aligns with the demands of today, as well as those of the future, through the principles of resident well-being and positive community interaction. He has held a number of senior executive roles in the New Zealand and Australian retirement sector. Bill entered the industry as acting CEO for a community-owned organization in County Victoria, Australia, where he successfully guided the organization through the accreditation process. Bill has assisted in the development and operation of the acclaimed Rylands facilities in Melbourne. The development projects won multiple awards from the Urban Development Institute of Australia and the Australian Institute of Building. They're recognized as benchmark retirement operations in Australia and internationally. Bill is truly a wealth of knowledge in this sector, and I hope that his insights inspire thinking about how your organization can establish the connection between customer experience and business value, as he has done through his leadership at Arvida. Bill, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. It's great to speak with somebody from the retirement village sector. It's not an industry that I've had a lot of experience in personally, but very interested in learning some more about it and learning about how customer experience and customer centricity play a role in your business.
Great. Thanks, Julie. We're looking forward to it. It's an exciting period in our sector, I think.
Can you tell me a little bit about what customers are looking for in retirement villages? What attributes are most important to them?
I think it's an evolving set of needs that are driving the customer. In the past, I think a lot of it has been around security and that sense of gated community, if you like. But I think that's transforming as we move into a new customer group. And I think that sense of community and a sense of connectedness is a growing part of what people are looking for. The driving factor, of course, is that aging process, which means that needs are changing. And moving into a retirement village means that, depending on the village, a lot of those needs are taken care of. So it's a complex mix that a customer has these days and also a changing one.
It's also probably, I'd imagine, quite a big life decision too. So lots of different factors going into it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But it's that period in life where often decisions become more needs-based rather than sort of aspirational decisions. Although that's not to say that they can't be that for retirement villages. But yeah, it is normally, you know, a decision that's made around a health event or death of a partner or something like that, which brings about the discussion within the family as to what the next step is for either mum or dad or for us as people.
And speaking of that, it is such a big decision. Is it a decision that's primarily made by the retirees themselves or in conjunction with their family, with their children? I mean, who is your customer here? Do you have multiple customers in that sense?
Yep, we sure do. That's absolutely right. We sort of term it the eldest daughter.
So me.
Well, that's right. You would know it quite well then, that for some reason, it seems to be that a lot of these responsibilities do fall to the eldest daughter. And if there's not a daughter, of course, well, it'll obviously fall to a son, but it just seems to be that it's the female that takes on a lot of that responsibility. A lot of it depends on the age of the potential resident and the needs and the type of village that you're looking at. In New Zealand, we have what we term continuum of care villages, which is the predominating type of village here, which offers independent living right through to hospital and dementia level care. So I guess when you have more of a needs-based village, you've got an older profile to the resident, and generally there is more family involved in that decision-making, whereas if it's more of a lifestyle village, it's perhaps more of an independent decision, independent of the kids, and you know, they might be consulted in relation to perhaps what might happen to their future inheritance. It might encompass much more than that. So during marketing and during the development of your material, you certainly need to bear in mind the various different customers that you're focusing on.
Interesting. So when it's a decision that's made earlier in life, the customer, in that sense, the decision is being driven more by the retiree, whereas if it's a needs-based decision or possibly later in life due to an illness or something, that the family might play a more active role. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's more involvement with family when it does come to more of that care type product or needs-based product, such as a service department, as opposed to buying the villa on the golf course. Although we're certainly seeing that people are deferring the decision to move into a retirement village until later, I think because people are retiring later and because people are healthier for much longer, they're not necessarily looking for that move into retirement villages. And of course, in the early stages of the industry, it was sort of a 55 plus type scenario, whereas now most operators in New Zealand are at 75 and over as an entry age. So it's really changed.
What does that mean in terms of dynamics? How do those play out when those older customers are deciding to go into retirement village when it's a family-based decision?
Well, it's interesting. There's ebbs and flows, I think, in the way in which those decisions are made. And we certainly see over here, and from my experience in Australia, that was quite evident there, that you go through phases when people are thinking they'll make a tree change or a sea change, meaning they'll move perhaps out of town or to a place they've always wanted to live, like the beach. And those factors become really appealing. And then it seems that things swing back and there's then more of a focus on being close to family, being close to your doctor that you've had for many years and close to those other services that you're familiar with. So you see phases of villages, it probably goes at a 10 or 12 year cycle of the movement towards that sea change, tree change, and then that movement back home closer to the family. So we certainly see that it's happening over here at the moment where people are deciding to move further away from their family home. And that's possibly linked, we think, to the fairly rapid rise in house prices in New Zealand. And of course, same things happen in Australia. And I'm not sure how things are tracking in South Africa, but I think it means that a person can free up a lot of capital in the major city by selling the family home and purchase a lifestyle unit out of town, put a lot of cash in the pocket and go through that 10 or 12 year period of having a great lifestyle. I think a lot of it may be linked to the property price cycle.
You know, in South Africa, a lot of the younger generations have moved abroad, leaving elderly parents back in South Africa. Is this the case in New Zealand? Are there a lot of young professionals that move abroad for opportunities?
Yeah, it is, a matter of fact. In fact, I really bucked the trend by coming across the ditch to New Zealand as opposed to going to Australia, because there is seen that there is a bit of a brain drain from New Zealand to both Australia and to the broader world. A lot go to the UK and a lot to the US, and it does leave families in that position where the older generation have to work out their requirements on their own. It's, of course, quite difficult to handle these things from afar, even though it can be done, of course. It does make it a little more difficult, and it means that there's a little more freedom. Interestingly enough, there's more freedom for the retiree because they don't have to make that decision to stay close to the grandkids necessarily if they have families that have moved away. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
Switching gears a little bit away from the family dynamics of making decisions about retirement living, with the surge in property prices and these sort of fluctuations, we see, you know, institutional investors investing in different aspects within property markets. Do you see a lot of real estate investment activity as investors purchasing property in retirement villages? Is that something that you see?
Yeah. The ability for institutional investors to access the property market via a retirement village is something that there's been a lot of focus on recently, because I think they see that there are key benefits by doing that, particularly when you look at the property market as a cyclical market. The institutional investors are seeing that it's a somewhat insulated market from the straight residential property market. It's a way in which you can gain access or exposure to that market. So we see that there is a strong interest in the retirement sector by the institutional market, probably around the world at the moment. So there's been some focus in New Zealand, I think, because there's been a number of quite successful listed operators over here, particularly Ryman Group, which has done very well in New Zealand, is now embarked into the Australian market and doing very well over there.
Given this really broad array of potential customers, buyers, what customer awareness strategies have worked for you guys and which ones have not?
That is the key question, I think, Julia. How do you gain that cut through to the customer and create a product that's differentiated? Aveda is only a bit over 4 years old. So we initially came to the market by acquiring 17 or 18 villages in New Zealand. Our strategy initially was to really recognise that those villages and those brands were good businesses and they had a solid reputation in their local communities. And we didn't want to necessarily muck around with that. So we employed a sub-branding policy of being, you know, Park Lane and Retirement Village, then it might be, you know, an Arvida Village at the bottom. Although as we have developed our IP and developed our point of differentiation in the market and have been able to improve the villages through our ownership, we're now looking more at how we can educate the market as to how to look at villages and determine what's a good product and what's not necessarily a good product, or how to understand what services are offered so you can make an informed choice as to what the services are that you actually need and therefore choose the appropriate village. So there's quite a lot there. And of course, we're working through that at the moment, but we do see it as somewhat of an educative process rather than an advertising job, I guess. It's quite interesting trying to get to the bottom of how you put that together. I guess the key thing is that you need to develop your particular IP first before you launch into that. That's certainly our belief.
And so as you're developing this, as you're thinking about, you know, how you educate and connect with your potential customer base, what are you seeing in terms of trends about what makes a retirement village brand stand out?
The most successful brand over here has been Ryman, and they produced a product which, as I mentioned earlier, had the continuum of care model built into it right from the start, which meant that they had independent villas through to service departments, through to rest home level care, hospital level care, and dementia level care. And they really hung their hat on the basis that you could move into the village and not have to leave. It was the final move. So that was really a key part of it. And then, interestingly enough, the success of the business itself on the stock exchange drove a lot of confidence in the brand name. And I guess because generally you are focused on a customer that owns their own home and probably is generally somewhat financially savvy, they were aware of the goings-ons in the market and saw the rise of the village. And I think they were able to connect the fact that a successful company must offer a good product. So it really worked in their favour and was very interesting to look at from afar. I think the market is probably becoming a little more sophisticated now and looking for further differentiation and looking at what the physical product looks like, what type of culture operates or exists within the business and how that will impact on the lived experience of the resident. So it's becoming more sophisticated.
And I'm sure that customers are looking at that. They're thinking, right, where do I want to spend my twilight years where, you know, I worked so hard in life? I want to be somewhere that's fun and comfortable. Does Arvida explicitly emphasize customer experience management? And if so, how?
Yeah, we're very focused on that. And the first challenge that we had, because if you look at our portfolio, we're probably about 60% needs-based product, which means that we have a lot of care in the business and we have a lot of service departments that can provide care to the residents. We also have most of our revenue tied up in that care side of things. So we've got good, sustainable, defensible earnings that come through. So the first thing we really needed to do was understand what type of service we're offering there, where all our people are employed. Retirement villages generally are pretty light on employees in New Zealand. It is a product where you've got just your manager and your receptionist and, you know, the gardener and maintenance and so forth, and that's about it. Whereas you move into the care and, you know, you've got serious numbers of people. We've got about 2,500 employees, the vast majority of them work in the care side of the business. So it is about setting out how you are going to roll out that culture so that you've got a product that you can get that genuine buy-in by the resident who can understand what sort of a community they're entering. And for us, it was all about focusing on the person. And we felt that what we were trying to do is transform the aging experience. That was our purpose, our mission that we set out on. And we felt that we could do that because we're in a market that really evolved from the hospital system. And if you look far enough back, you'll see that the hospital and medical systems themselves really emerged out of militaristic hierarchical approach to things. It was, you know, about assisting soldiers during wars and that type of thing. And I think you still see, if you look at hospital structures, that very interesting hierarchical approach to thing where doctors are sort of the king of the world, and then you move to nurses, and then at the end of the rung, you've got your carers and cleaners and so forth. And we set out on a mission to remove that hierarchical structure and change our care facilities, which really was the core and the heart of the retirement villages, into a genuine home as opposed to a medical facility. To do that, we did things like remove the buzzers, took all the rolling lights out in the corridors, and asked our staff not to wear uniforms and to wear their casual clothes to work. Really, really big steps for people to take who had been working in the sector for a long time to change the whole paradigm of how they believed care should be delivered. And we were all about purely focusing on the customer, understanding who that person is, what was important to them in their life, what they did in their life, how the family was made up, and what we could do to create value in their lives, rather than, I think, what's the more traditional approach is sort of prodding and poking and measuring and weighing people in their into their grave so we sort of know exactly how they died. It was more about doing everything we could to transform that experience so it could be some of the best years that they've had later in life, rather than living in a clinical environment. That was the big challenge initially.
How did you go about understanding the customer? Because that's a big challenge in this field of customer experiences. How do you distill down that essence of the voice of the customer to understand who your customers are and what they want and need?
I think that's exactly right. That's the key starting point. And I think that our journey in landing on what our customer needs were was something that you could really only pick up over a lot of experience in working with older people. I guess taking more of a philosophical approach as to what it means to age and gaining that understanding that in reality, people stay who they are inside the whole time and got an aging body with changing needs, but still a person in there that wants to live at home in a community and have those relationships that they've always had and not go, right, well, given up now, hit the slippery slope and it's time to move into a different environment and sort of God's waiting room, which that's the antithesis of what we're trying to create. And I guess also a lot of reading of how longitudinal studies on the aging process and how people's lives evolve and what are the impacting factors that can determine a good older age. There was a particularly good study done at Harvard University that ran for a very long time, I think 60 plus years. You may be familiar with it, that really identified a lot of the key factors, and none of them were to do with how much money you'd made or what sort of job you had or anything like that. It was more about the relationships that you'd held and, you know, how your family life went and other less tangible aspects, which were really the determining factors. So we started sort of understanding that to provide services to our customer that could offer them better chance of having a successful older age, we had to focus on those types of things that could specifically impact the outcomes for the customer.
you know, interesting that you mention relationships as something that really impacts people's happiness. Earlier, you spoke about culture and team culture. How have your core values played into the way that your organization has evolved the customer experience?
They've actually been core to the evolution of that customer experience. And without spending that time right at the beginning, you know, we wouldn't have been able to achieve what we have to date. That's fundamental, I think. You know, we were in the very fortunate position of being able to sit back and work out exactly how we were going to structure ourselves as an organization and then begin with a certain level of scale that enabled us to launch into our mission. And obviously, it's gone pretty successfully. And I think that a lot of that is due to the values that we set at the beginning, so that that culture was able to form in the way in which we felt it should. So, you know, our values sort of revolve around being passionate, you know, loving what we do, and the fact that the residents are really our family, and being authentic, and that we're genuine and real. And I think that's a very big piece of it. And, you know, not creating a contrived community or a contrived service, and acting with fairness and integrity and sort of responding fairly to any of the issues and decisions that we have to make on a day-to-day basis. And also trying to engender that can-do attitude that only really happens if you've got an empowered team. And we've done that by taking away that hierarchy that we spoke about earlier and empowering those sort of grassroots employees that actually hold the key relationships with the residents and can make a difference if you give them the permission to make decisions, and also being able to be innovative as we build the business and, you know, making decisions and challenging normal if it makes sense to do so, and to help that just being nimble and flexible when we do decide that, you know, we think there's innovative ways to challenge normal. So that's really our set of values, and that has absolutely underpinned the ability to develop that culture and create a fairly substantial position in the market over such a short period of time.
So in this purpose statement of transforming the aging experience, which I think is quite cool, and it's great that it's focused around an experience, and you spoke about focusing on the customer and creating value for the customer, which is amazing. I mean, for me as a customer experience professional and the other customer experience professionals listening right now, this is definitely music to our ears. One of the challenges sometimes that we have as a professional community is turning around and demonstrating how this delivers business value in your business as a CEO. How have you seen delivering customer value turn into delivering business value?
That's the key, of course, isn't it? And when you're dealing with these intangibles, I think that you have to truly believe in them and embed them in the business to make it create that value for the customer. So we really started with what we felt was the key thing that was going to make the difference for us was not necessarily the design of the buildings or any of these factors, which we're able to focus a bit more on now, but because we bought these facilities, we got what we were given, if you like. So the thing that was going to, that we could really add to that mix was creating an attitude. And we thought it really just came down to the attitude, and the attitude that we have tried to instill, and it's now what we call our whole model, is the attitude of living well. When people understood what we were talking about, and that the attitude of living well meant that it wasn't about those clinical factors and us ensuring that, you know, we could assist you with your daily tasks, but actually the fact that we really wanted to understand what you enjoyed and wanted to do, and we're going to make that real and happen for you. It transformed our occupancy rates. It transformed our ability to gain certification periods, which is a key selling point for our customers. And it enabled us to increase our premium charging, if you like, and we're still on that journey. But those factors enabled us to create a higher EBITDA per bed than certainly what was achievable by those businesses in the past. And I think we're standing out in the sector now as being able to make money in areas where others can't, which I think comes down to those factors that we've spoken about. So it is about being able to convert it and understanding that these pieces of work that you're putting into play are genuinely making a difference for the shareholder at the end of the day.
Well, especially if you can track those activities and tie them back to an increase in interest from customers and higher occupancy and those tangible metrics. I mean, that's fantastic. So thinking a little bit about the future of your industry, I was reading something in preparation for this conversation about what's called in the US the silver tsunami. I didn't know that was a term, but apparently that's what the retirement village industry refers to as the aging generation of baby boomers. And I was reading something that was saying that between 2010 and 2040, the US population of people over the age of 65 will grow by 90%. So there's this massive wave of people who are headed towards retirement. And most of those baby boomers are not yet sort of at that 75 age where they would be looking at the needs-based care. They might be more kind of looking at the lifestyle options at the moment. But how have customer expectations for Retirement Village evolved, or do you see them evolving in the future with this silver tsunami? And I guess I should also ask, is there a silver tsunami in New Zealand too?
Yeah, there is. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. And the funny thing about the industry is we've been gearing up for this for years and building all this product and waiting for the baby boomer tsunami, as you say, to roll on through and create this great golden period for our sector. And maybe it will, but there is also a chance that we're going to completely miss it, because the baby boomers historically have always determined and dictated how things will be for them, what the type of product is that they're interested in. And if there's a product out there that they don't particularly like, well, they'll go and create their own product. And I think that is where we need to be pretty focused at the moment. And understanding that if you are going to provide a service, particularly for the baby boomers, you must be able to demonstrate the value for the price that you're charging. And if a baby boomer, in my view, can't see value there, they're not going to accept your product and they'll find another type of product that will meet their needs. So I think we need to be fairly conscious as a sector that we've got a very different cohort coming through that have a very different view on how to handle their needs as they age. And I think if you look at certainly what's happened in this part of the world, as the baby boomers sort of got to school age, you had this proliferation of schools emerge and everything changed. And then when they got into the workforce, you had the big property companies that built shopping centers and so forth just came into being, and enormous wealth was created. And of course, everything was modified and changed to suit the ways in which these people thought and worked, and they are much more self-focused. It's not so much of that silent generation approach where it's, oh, don't worry about me, we'll be fine, think of yourselves. It's really going to be about exactly what they're looking for as a customer and going out and finding it. I guess the potential upside of that is there mightn't be such a focus on leaving an inheritance for the kids, so that might be good for us as a sector. But I think that we need to understand those challenges and create a valuable product that they can genuinely see why they should invest in it and make that their long-term decision, because as you said earlier, it's a big decision.
So that's interesting. So it sounds like the baby boomers have defined themselves in a lot of ways as sort of a do-it-yourself generation, or generation that wants to kind of own their options, which creates both a challenge and an opportunity. A challenge in that you guys as a group, Arvita, you need to invest in things in anticipation of the need being there. So obviously you have to have some insight ahead of time, but also it creates an opportunity for kind of co-creation with this generation, you know, listening to them tell you what they want and helping build it for them in kind of a collaborative way.
Yep, agree with you, Julia. I think that is the future, and it's understanding how those collaborations can be made and perhaps front-footing it a bit by being a leader in the field that will attract them in the first place to want to engage with you and create that level of interaction to create new products that suit them. So to that end, we are much more focused on integrating with the outside community as opposed to just creating a mini community within the walls of the village. And we think that they will want to be much more connected. They won't want to be cut off from the greater world because it's their world, and they will want services that the current generation haven't been looking for. And they'll also have higher expectations from a service perspective. So we need to be training our staff now to be more resilient, more customer focused. When you've got customers that are on your door day in, day out, it's very different to having a different group of customers come in each day. It can be a very difficult business to run in that regard, that a lot of staff end up getting quite burnt out if you've got a different customer group or resident group, I should say. So there's a lot of factors that need to be considered. We're also looking at other factors like focusing on environmental issues and using locally sourced materials to build our new villages. And we're not providing car parks in some of our new villages. We're providing a pod of electric vehicles that are powered from an array of solar voltaic panels on the roof. And we're providing community centres where residents come in the back door and the general public comes in the front, so that we create that interface with the greater community. So it's a lot of things we're doing now that might not necessarily suit our current residents, but we're certainly getting a lot of feedback from, as you say, those 70, 75-year-olds who are pricking their ears to what we're doing and seeing that perhaps we're the type of operator that they'd be interested in down the track.
So on that note, in terms of innovation and integrating elements that the next generation of retirees will be interested in, you know, we live in this digital age now, one in which our digital capabilities have totally exploded. And a lot of these things enable organizations to more effectively understand their customers and deliver better experiences. Things like the Internet of Things, smart floor tiles, connection to consumer smartwatches, things like that. Are you guys looking at integrating digital technology into the evolution of your retirement villages?
Yeah, we're looking very closely at what's emerging there. With our current customer base, there isn't an enormous amount of interest in things like wearables or being monitored too closely, and there's always a bit of a fine line there. But down the track, it's certainly there. So we're embedding the infrastructure now to ensure that when the time's right, we can do that sort of thing. But certainly we have gone down that path in the early stages of putting in the systems that will enable connected smoke alarms and connected water meters. So if a tap's been running for too long, we're notified. The smoke alarm goes off. Generally, it's someone burning their toast, of course. And creating the links electronically for communication to our residents, so that if a resident's a bit lonely, they can hit the emergency button and not consider that they're going to be in trouble for pressing it unnecessarily, but they can actually just have a chat to the person at the end of the line and have a talk about the weather or whatever they want to have a chat about, gain some medication reminders for a while if they want, or get the person at the other end of the line to contact family, have a chat about issues. So we see that there is an enormous amount of scope there, and also great ability to generate new revenue streams as we go forward. So there is a focus, but we're going through that transition period, I guess, where it's a little difficult to see a return on that investment with our current customer cohort, but we know it's there in the future. So the investment is being made. We're just trying to identify, because it's such a rich environment of products out there, we really need to understand what decisions we'll be making on the product so that we don't sort of go down too many dead-end paths.
There are all kinds of stats about technology use by generation, and the biggest jump is between the silent generation and the baby boomers. So I could see how your current group of customers might not be as into using devices, but the next generation might be more interested. Sort of speaking of that, I mean, social media is something that's really changed the way that we all interact with each other. Have you guys integrated social media either into your experiences in the retirement villages or as a way to engage potential customers? How has social media played into the business so far?
Yeah, we're starting on that journey, Julia. It's been a slow start there with a lot of things that we focus on over the last few years. Social media, even though it's on our horizon, It's not something we have put a lot of focus on today. Some of our villages are operating their own Facebook pages, which are really successful and going well. We've got our own LinkedIn page, which we haven't put much of a focus on. When we go through a website renewal in the next couple of months, we're going to engage in that social media space. But interestingly enough, as a business, we have adopted Yammer, which is the Microsoft or Facebook-y type thing for organizations. And it's been an incredibly successful tool in developing our culture and our values across the business. And it's used on a daily basis by hundreds of our team members, putting up photos of activities that residents are doing and sharing experiences and cross-pollinating all those great ideas that emerge in one village and can be utilized across the greater portfolio. So from the perspective of Yammer, it's been absolutely brilliant, and we probably wouldn't have had the success we've had without Yammer. The pure focus on the customer, we're not quite there yet, but it's something that we need to do, and we need to get a little more focused on it soon. We've been dabbling in Google AdWords and things like that from a marketing perspective, but no big launch in the media space. Although we've got a lot of very famous shareholders, of course, because we had some of the All Blacks who were our initial foundation shareholders. So that gave us a great bit of PR in the early stages of setting up the business. We actually had Dan Carter, who you may or may not know, who rang the bell at the stock exchange for us when we took off. So they've certainly got a big number of followers, and we know that there's a great deal of potential there.
Well, it's really great to hear that you're using a form of social media internally as an organization. I see a lot of businesses thinking about social media primarily as an outward-looking tool to create awareness and marketing. And, you know, these channels are incredibly powerful in those ways, but oftentimes they overlook the value of using social media internally as a way to share information and to get employees and internal stakeholders excited about and rallied around the common purpose and goals. So that's really fantastic to hear that you guys have used Yammer as an internal social media platform. Good on you.
Thank you. It was a big surprise to us, to be honest. We embarked on and thought, oh, well, we'll see how it goes because it seems to fit within our culture. But within months, it just blew up and everyone loved it. And it turned us from a group of, we've got 29 villages now, a group of disparate villages spread around the country to a group under one unified banner of Yammer. So it was really interesting. We've actually even had Microsoft show some interest in it because of the level of use that it's had. They've been quite surprised and said we're one of the biggest users.
That's outstanding. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about this. This has been a really exciting and interesting conversation. I've learned a ton, and I'm sure my listeners will also learn a ton. Thank you.
My pleasure, Julia. It was really interesting, and it's great to be able to talk about some of the things that we've done. It's good to reflect on the journey.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Bill McDonald. I'd also like to say a special thanks to Allison Watt from the Retirement Village Summit in South Africa for helping me get in touch with Bill. I'm speaking at two of the Retirement Village Summit events later on this year, and through my conversations with the team in preparation for these events, we decided to highlight an example of global thought leadership in the sector. Without this connection, I don't know that I would have had the opportunity to speak with Bill or to do a deep dive into this industry, but I'm really thankful that I did. I believe that these insights are useful both to CX practitioners looking to apply learnings to the context of their own business, which might be in a totally different sector, as well as to attendees of the Retirement Village Summit, who will get a sneak peek into global trends. If you're enjoying the podcast, I invite you to share the program with others or head on over to iTunes and rate the program. This helps others discover the show. I'll be back next Thursday and every Thursday this month with new CX Mini Masterclass episodes. For the month of March, I'm focusing on the topic of CX metrics and measurement, so be sure to listen in or subscribe for updates when new shows go live. This episode was sponsored by CX University, a CX training company offering a broad array of customer experience learning options, including the convenience of learning anywhere and anytime with their online program, e-learning modules, and CCXP practice exams. CX University is an accredited resource and training provider, and they offer a flexible and affordable monthly subscription model. At the time of publishing this episode, course subscriptions start at just $75 per month and include access to CCXP practice exam questions. Listeners of this podcast can get 10% off their first month subscription by entering the discount code PODCAST10 at checkout. If you're looking for help realizing customer-centric change in your organization, please don't hesitate to get in touch. My contact details are on my website, or you can reach me on LinkedIn and Twitter. My handle is @JuliaAllfelt.